I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time for the kickoff show. It's Sunday, and we're locked in on the red and gold. Here are your hosts, Vonte Hill and Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
Finally, folks, week one of the NFL season is here. Niners down in Tampa Bay to kick off the 2019 season. Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Bosa, we're going to see all those guys. And here to talk about all that before kickoff at 125 down there at Raymond James Stadium is Vonte Hill, Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy. What's happening, Butch?
Hey, I know one thing. Niners! Let's go!
I walk into the building today here, Battery and Broadway here at 95.7 The Game, and Butcher Boy is yelling from the top of his lungs at 9:30 in the morning. I'm like, what's kickoff?
Niners!
That's what I'm saying. He's been fired up. I'm fired up. And hopefully you guys are fired up as we get ready for kickoff in the Niners. Trying to recover from a rough 2018 season where they did go 4-12, Butcher Boy. We've been waiting on this year because Jimmy Garoppolo's healthy now. They have Tevin Coleman. This is the most loaded roster Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have put together since they've been in San Francisco. And now there's no more excuses. It's time to win games. And I feel like today in week number one, it will set the tone for the 2019 season.
Well, you have so many storylines. Jimmy Garoppolo obviously is going to be the headliner, but I think Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, this is a huge, huge year. This is the first big-time game with big-time expectations in a long time for this organization. And it's one of those games on the schedule when you look at the schedule as a whole, you say, they got to have this game. They got to have this. They haven't won on the East Coast in over 5 years. That was a hallmark of the Harbaugh years when this team was humming. And I know I was driving through the city today. I was coming in. There is nothing like driving around on a Sunday morning when you know the 49ers are going to play. And San Francisco has that quiet feel to it.
It does.
And the sun's starting to come up. Yep. And you're driving around. And it's the optimism of a new year. And that's what this is. You got Nick Bosa making his debut. Quan Alexander making his return to Tampa Bay. So many storylines, obviously, from Tampa Bay's perspective. Jameis Winston, as much as we're critiquing and breaking down every facet of Jimmy Garoppolo, the same exact thing is happening in Tampa Bay right now for Jameis Winston. Let's get this thing going,
man,
baby.
And a lot of things are going on in the NFL. Of course, Kansas City, Jacksonville's kicked off. Vikings up on the Falcons. We'll keep you updated on everything around the NFL today, including a quick snippet of what happened in Alameda yesterday with Antonio Brown now being a New England Patriot. I'll ask you later in the show, Butcher Boy, whether or not the Niners should have got after Antonio Brown when he was released by the Oakland Raiders. We'll get to that. But look, the Niners open the season again in Tampa Bay for the first time since 1997. And back in 97, that was Steve Mariucci's first game as the 49ers head coach. Steve Young gets hurt. Jerry Rice gets hurt. He tears an ACL, comes back for a Monday Night Football game against the Broncos, gets hurt in that game, and the Niners end up losing the NFC Championship that season to the Green Bay Packers and Brett Favre 23-10. But a lot of bad memories in that game and a lot of bad memories for the 49ers in Tampa last season when they had to release Reuben Foster before the game. And, of course, Marquise Goodwin had to fly back due to personal reasons.
Well, and then who's the guy that's kind of linked to all of those particular moments? John Lynch, who's running the 49ers and is one of the greatest Tampa Bay Buccaneers of all time. So everything's coming full circle. This is a big-time showcase for both organizations that want to start the year off in a good way. And let's be honest, this is going to boil down to two things. Can the 49ers dominate at the point of attack on the defensive line? And can they dominate at the point of attack on the offensive line? Can they run the ball effectively, Bonte?
And I think that is a key to ease Jimmy Garoppolo into the season. I don't want to see him throwing 45 times like Mitchell Trubisky did on Thursday night against the Packers. I want to see him throwing between 25 to 35 times and really control the football in what is going to be a hot day in Tampa Bay. JD will chime in with us at about 12 o'clock, 5 minutes after the inactives are announced, Butcher Boy. And from what I hear, it's about 90 degrees. The humidity is over 90%. It's going to be hot. Thankfully for the Niners, they don't have to wear the red jerseys. They're wearing their white jerseys today. So that helps a little bit here. But they're not used to the humidity down there in Tampa Bay. And you look at this football team. And I'll ask the audience here, what do you need to see from the 49ers in all three phases of the game? Offense, defense, special teams. What do you need to see for the 49ers to win the game today in Tampa Bay? Because you mentioned it, Butcher. Coming out the season, and Kyle Shanahan as head coach of the 49ers in September and October, he's a combined 1-16. He's won one game in September, and that came last season against the Lions in week number two, a game that really a lot of 49er fans felt like, damn, we really didn't deserve that win after Garoppolo got sacked six times or whatnot. But all the expectations, everything we talked about, it's now here. It's now here. So what are you expecting down in Tampa Bay today, Butcher?
Well, I'm expecting a heavy dose of the run game. And I know everybody's going to point to Breida, and they're going to point to Coleman, and I agree with that. But let me give you my playmaker of today. And it's not through the passing game. It's the run game. I'm going to go with George Kittle. George Kittle's one of the best inline blockers in the game at the tight end position.
No doubt.
And I think that this particular matchup screams, we're running the ball wide with the zone. We're going to try to get some of that inside stuff. But Weston Richburg, coming off his injury, maybe he's not 100%. Maybe he doesn't have game speed right out of the gate. So I'm going to look to get the ball on the outside with the tackle and tight end in the game, sealing off the edge. And I want to get Breida to the second level of the defense. To me, it's 25 or more touches. That's what I want to see combined from Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida. That's my recipe for success today.
I like that. Some quick nuggets here between the Niners and Tampa Bay. Niners hold a 17-7 overall record against the Tampa Bay Bucs, dating back to their first meeting way back in 1977, in which the Niners won at Candlestick Park 20-10. Was the turf still in 77 at Candlestick? Remember they had the turf?
Yeah, the turf was like 71 through 77 or 76, something
really,
like that.
Really
yeah.
A bad look for Candlestick Park. They finally got that rid of that turf and went back to the natural grass. Tampa Bay right now, Butcher Boy, holds a two-game win streak against San Francisco, dating back to 2016. Of course, they came to Levi Stadium in 2016, won 34-17. And, of course, last year in a really one of the more uglier games for the 49ers in 2018, they beat the Niners 27-9. First time they met back-to-back seasons since 2010 and 2011. And the Niners' all-time record starting on the road in week one, 16-18. And as I just mentioned, Kyle Shanahan, 0-2. An opener. So they have to get off to a fast start because you mentioned the schedule, you mentioned the expectations. Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, then Pittsburgh and Cleveland at home. You must finish this quarter of the season, I believe, at least at 2-2.
Well, and the first two most winnable games happen to be the first two games right of the year. And unfortunately, what makes it even more difficult is that they're both on the road in the Eastern time zone. And we know how much they've struggled there. They're going to spend the week in Youngstown, Ohio. Would it not be a great team building exercise to win down in Florida and then spend the week in Youngstown, Ohio, preparing for the Cincinnati Bengals, who themselves have major question marks with the first year head coach?
Yep.
So the question for today, though, for me, from this defense, can you make the Tampa Bay Buccaneers one-dimensional and allow all of this pass rush that you've invested so much draft capital and money into? Can you get after Jameis? And who the heck is going to guard Mike Evans? He puts the fear of God into me when I look at this particular matchup against our secondary, as thin as they be, and he is such a dynamic talent. He's Calvin Johnson, even more physical. I mean, I'm worried really about how are they going to match up with this guy.
Yeah, we got the report, was it Thursday, about Mike Evans being sick. He had an illness, and I thought to myself, there's no way he's missing week one of the NFL season. Mike Evans loves football. He's a football player, and he is a beast. And I don't know who you match up on him. Do you put Richard Sherman, and do you say, let Richard Sherman shadow him all over the football field? Do you trust Akella Witherspoon, or do you trust a smaller corner like a K'Wan Williams or Jason Verrett to shadow Mike Evans? This matchup worries me, but what worries me more is actually O.J. Howard down the seams.
Really?
Because Jaquaski Tartt, look, he will lay the boom. He will hit you. But his pass coverage, Butcher Boy, really is a concern for me. O.J. Howard, who's 6'5", he can run like a deer. He is a problem for me. These tight ends in Tampa Bay, Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard, I think is a matchup nightmare for the San Francisco safety position.
Well, that's why I think I brought in Quan Alexander. He's one of the best pass defending linebackers in the game. You got him because he can cover out in space, and this guy, when motivated, and he had a 20-tackle game the day after his brother passed away. I mean, this is an individual who, when push comes to shove, brings the spirit and the fire. That's why him and Fred Warner, the Hot Boys, as they're calling themselves, I'm looking at those two to set the tone. Set the tone in the run game, set the tone on the underneath stuff, and take away those tight ends. And I think both of those guys are equipped to do so. The safety position, look, I'd be lying to you if I told you I was confident in the safety position for the 49ers.
Tarvarius Moore will get to start at free safety. Jimmy Ward out after breaking a finger. His finger got caught up in another player's jersey at practice. He is out in week one. So you got you're starting Tarvarius Moore, and Tukwosky Tart at the safety position. That is a concern, especially if you don't get the pass rush. And they should get the pass rush when you invest Nick Bosa, number two overall pick in Nick Bosa, D Ford, you trade a second round pick, and give him a fat contract. Then you got Buckner in the middle. And that should help out Solomon Thomas and Eric Armstead as well. A lot of major storylines to get to though, Butcher Boy. What are some of the biggest storylines for you right off the bat before we get into it next segment?
Well, it's Jimmy Garoppolo and how he can get acclimated, and then Kyle Shanahan with the play calling. Like, if I was going to look at what I would say the template for success is for today, it's short, controlled passes that allow Jimmy Garoppolo to build some confidence. I'm looking at someone like Kyle Juszczyk.
Right.
And can I use the misdirection game to get this young linebacker, Devin White, over-pursuing and creating space for Kittle, for whether it's Toilolo, whether it's Juszczyk. I want to do short, controlled passes that are all built off of the simple run game, whether that's the simple dives, the traps, the inside stuff, and then building up that zone action to the outside, which will allow for play action over the middle.
Man, I'm fired up here to kickoff show on 95.7 A Game with Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy, and Bonte Hill. We'll take you up until 125. We'll talk about the major storylines here. The third season, a crucial season for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, the third year of this rebuild. Brick by brick is what they call it. Let's see how many bricks they've laid down for the 2019 season. And it's a return of Jimmy Garoppolo, the debut of number two overall pick Nick Bosa. A lot of good things happening down at Tampa Bay. Niners, Bucks, 888-957-9570. What do you need to see in all three phases of the game? Offense, defense, special teams. And let's get into the major storylines for the San Francisco 49ers. Here in the 2019 season, it's Butcher Boy, it's Bonte right here on 95.7 A Game.
Now, back to the kickoff show with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
Niners Bucks 125 down at Raymond James Stadium. We'll talk to John Dickinson, who's live in Tampa Bay at about 12 o'clock. 5 minutes after the inactives are released, it's Bonte and Butcher Boy as we get into the major storylines in 2019. And Butch, right off the bat, it's obviously number 10. What will Jimmy Garoppolo do? Has an opt-out in his contract after the season. It's all about number 10, Jimmy G.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, you gave the guy a lot of money. You had to. You know, I didn't want to go down the franchise tag route. They had tons and tons of money. So you paid the guy. Great. Now let's treat him like he is a second or third year quarterback, and let's put the infrastructure in place and the play calling that is fair with where he's at as a quarterback. Don't treat him like he's Tom Brady or Drew Brees, an established player that can come right out of the gate and do a 7-step drop and complete a 22-yard pass down the field. I want to see this guy slow build this thing. Let's crawl before we walk. And, you know, Jimmy, I have a lot of faith in Jimmy this year. For some weird reason, I've come full circle on him. I was super excited a couple of years ago, like everyone was. Right. I saw passes that I hadn't seen from a 49er quarterback since going back to Steve Young. Because even Jeff Garcia didn't hang in the pocket and take shots downfield intermediately the way that Jimmy Garoppolo does, which is kind of the template for a 2019 quarterback. You know, Garcia liked to roll out and create different platforms for himself, and so did Kaepernick. Right. And I think at times Alex Smith could be a decent passer, but it was more underneath stuff. For Jimmy Garoppolo to get going, they need this guy's confidence to be sky high, and he needs to not process things. That was the one thing. Going back the three games last year, I felt like he was so overwhelmed with, I got to go through my progressions.
Was he just trying to do too much, Butcher? Because it felt like he was trying to do too much, especially in the Minnesota and Detroit games, where he threw the three picks in Minnesota week one, where they lose up there in Minnesota. And then against Detroit, where he took the six sacks, but he held on to the ball too long. He rolled out the pocket. It felt like he tried to do too much as opposed to just having a lot of pressure on himself.
Well, if we really look back at some of the subtleties of why they struggled in the first three games, Marquise Goodwin got hurt like the first half of the Minnesota game.
Pierre Garçon, too. Remember
and
that?
Jerick McKinnon. Like, so you had two guys at all we heard about last year building up to the regular season opener was, oh my God, the whole offense is going to be built around Marquise Goodwin and Jerick McKinnon. Now, I thought that was a flawed plan.
Right.
But that was what their plan was. And then when both guys are out after, you know, 10, 11 minutes of offensive play, you were left playing Dante Pettis, a rookie who barely played in preseason, and he's your starting wideout. So they had a lot to overcome. I also think that the offensive line, if we're being totally honest with ourselves, was overwhelmed early in last season.
I agree.
You had a rookie in Mike McGlinchey starting, a new guy in Weston Richburg. So I expect the offensive line in another year together, the cohesion, I expect them to be better. I don't know necessarily, though, if Weston Richburg is going to be ready to play for this game. I don't know that the Bucs' strength is up the middle on the defensive line, though.
I'm with you there. Let's hear from Kyle Shanahan, because a lot of people have asked, is Jimmy Garoppolo ready to play? Is he ready to go? Can he play 16 games? How healthy is he? Well, let's hear from the head coach, Kyle Shanahan, earlier this week, talking about how ready Jimmy Garoppolo is.
I think he's as far along as he can be. I mean, I think that's a challenge for everyone. You know, no one gets to play a lot in the preseason, especially quarterbacks. I mean, you get hit. I think he got hit a couple times, but not too much. But it's the same for everyone coming back from an ACL. You know, they go through the whole preparation of getting their body ready, trying to get their mind ready, which they're always as ready for as they can be, but they got to go out there and go through it. You hope it happens in the first quarter, the first game, but that usually takes a little bit of time.
And then Kyle Shanahan, go ahead, Butch.
No, I was going to say, you know, when you get a new toy, right? You get a new toy, you want to use that toy right away. And I feel like Kyle Shanahan, in many ways, he was overly reliant on Jimmy Garoppolo heading into last year. And I know they didn't have a lot of options in free agency as far as playmakers. Great playmakers just don't, they don't become available in the offseason. But when you draft Deebo Samuel, I expect this guy to make an impact immediately for this team. And I'm very interested to see how Kyle Shanahan can scheme things up, because the 49ers really haven't had a wide receiver who can make contested plays over the middle since Terrell Owens.
Man,
and I know
Anquan
Boldin was older.
Crabtree here and there. And I'm with you there with Deebo. And Deebo actually looks like an Anquan Boldin.
He
just
does.
Faster. He kind of reminds me of the build and everything, running out of the slot position. I expect big things from Deebo Samuel. You know, I was high on him, and especially after the Senior Bowl, when you see him run the routes, and he just seemed like he knew how to run NFL-type routes coming out of South Carolina. I'm high on Deebo Samuel. And also Jalen Hurd, who will not play today.
I agree.
I think that's the guy later on in the season who could be your X factor, who could be your weapon to where, kind of like a Delanie Walker. He's big. He's physical. He's 6'5", about 230. He can lower the boom on you. He has hands. He has speed. Jalen Hurd can be that Swiss Army knife for this football team and this offense. And I'm very intrigued on what Kyle Shanahan does with him later on in the season, but we're not going to see him today.
No, we're not. We're not. But that's why I'm looking at the template this year for this game, first week. Jimmy Garoppolo only played a handful of snaps. He played less snaps in preseason this year than he did the year prior. He's coming off the injury. Hand the ball off. Run the rock right down their throat and ride the young ascending star, Matt Breida. I know everybody.
Love you some Breida.
I do. I really
I love
Breida,
too. Breida the cheetah. He's fast. He runs through the hole. He's a guy that the Niners wanted to sneak onto their practice squad, but word got out that he was tearing up practice, and the Niners was like, well, we got to keep this guy in the 53. I want to continue with Jimmy Garoppolo,
yeah,
though, Butcher Boy. Kyle Shanahan added this to what he said about Jimmy G. He says, I know number 10 can play.
I know Jimmy can play. I can't tell you exactly how he's going to play every single play or every single game. I know Jimmy's going to have some ups and downs, but I don't sit there and try to make a different decision based off of one practice or one preseason game and then flip the next game. Jimmy's working his way back. He's ready to go. He's as far as long as he can be. I know he's confident, excited for the season, but we need Sunday to come, not just for him, but for all of us. We've all been itching for this game since the season ended last year. And when you're coming back from an injury, I think that's even heightened for those type of players.
What I'm going to be looking at for Jimmy Garoppolo early in this game, anticipation. Do you anticipate when a wide receiver is going to break his route, where the blitz is coming from, where's the hot read to go on a particular play? And then the other little tiny element, ball placement. I know he looked a lot better in week three of the preseason against Kansas City, but for me, the ball placement wasn't as pinpoint as I would like.
Right.
And I want to see early in this game, does he have the accuracy and the anticipation to help this team going forward, because, you know, Jimmy's going to throw up 50-50 balls. I think we would all agree there. But can he limit his improvisation outside of the pocket? And when a play is dead, just throw it away.
Right.
Let's eat
Didn't
the
play.
Didn't
see that last year. Didn't see that last year. He took sacks. He threw it across into the teeth of the blitz. What strikes in my mind immediately is the Minnesota game where they do blitz. There's a miscommunication on the outside between Dante Pettis or Kendrick Bourne. Well, you got to just, you know what? Take the sack.
You kill the
play. Take the sack. Live to see another down. Punt the football. Let your defense get the ball back. And don't throw up a ball where you give up 6 points there. Yeah. That was a game changer. Jimmy Garoppolo cannot do too much today. So, I was a little worried after the Denver game. There's no doubt about it. Kansas City, I thought, B minus C, but he started to find that it factor. You saw him really struggle, like really trying to get that rust off, and he was trying to make plays out there. The dime to Richie James Jr., beautiful. The touchdown pass to Matt Breida, I thought was a bad throw. He led him into the safety. He had him wide open. He just needs more reps. He needs more reps. So how long do you think it'll take Jimmy Garoppolo to get comfortable, especially in today's game in that heat down in Tampa Bay?
I look at him kind of like I look at a three-point shooter who's streaky. Like, I mean that. Like, he's one of those guys, one or two plays, and he kind of gets his rhythm and he gets going. But when he's off, he's just kind of off, you know, and he looked real complacent. When the ball's hitting the floor from the quarterback position, you know, they're throwing and there's a lot of incomplete passes. Offense looks lethargic. I don't care what quarterback you are, but specifically for this team, you know, and I'm looking for this is a very simple play that I want to see early on. Get Kyle Juszczyk involved on that little misdirection fullback flat pass where they try to get the defense and the offense flowing to the right side. Then they're going to throw it back over to the left side. Use that play to get him going. Run a couple of more handoffs. And then the play that I thought got him really rocking and rolling in that Kansas City preseason game was the simple little handoff to the little flat screen slant pass to my man Kendrick Bourne over the middle. I saw Jimmy really like, okay, boom, we got a first down.
Right.
He's jogging up to the line. He's feeling good. Jimmy plays better when we kind of get up tempo, you know, almost like a basketball team, and they start to get going, and he doesn't have to overly think about it. I want to see them run some up tempo, still run the ball, but run more up tempo, especially in this heat, and allow the offense to dictate personnel to the defense.
Tempo, tempo, tempo. I like that. By the way, if you're a Dolphins fan, I feel for you. I feel for the Dolphins fans. Ravens right now leading with 142 left in the first half. 42-3.
Oh, my goodness.
Down in South Beach. Lamar Jackson, 4 touchdown passes, 10 for 11, 210 yards. 42-3 down in South Beach. Let's hope we don't see this score in Florida with the Niners with 3 and the Bucks with 42. That would be a problem here. Real quick from the 925 on the Chill Not Nobody text line. We've been waiting too long to not see anything to be hopeful for. The 49ers need to show us something early this season or else we will not believe in them. How big of a game? And we'll get into the big three, Lynch, Shanahan, and Garoppolo in just a second, Butcher. But how big of a game is this for not only the fan base, but for that football team that has struggled coming out of the gates, that haven't won in home an opener under Kyle Shanahan? It feels like this one sets the tone for the entire season. You win this one, you're feeling good going to Cincinnati, spending a week in Youngstown, Ohio, and all of a sudden you're 2-0 coming back to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, who can lay duds on the road. But how big? I feel like this one, the tone setter. You lose today, you may be struggling to a 6-10 season.
No, you're not may. You will have a 6-10 season, or maybe worse, because the way the schedule's set up this year, unfortunately, all the quote-unquote winnable games are on the East Coast on the Eastern time zone, and they're all road games. I would not be surprised if this team wants to go, let's just say, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. You have to win 3 or 4, if not 5, of these East Coast games. And 2 of them are the first two games
of the
year. And so for me, you could say litmus test. You could say all these different analogies that you want to utilize. No, these are must wins. These are must wins. Good teams go out and they beat these teams. The irony in this situation is that Tampa Bay is looking at the Niners and they're saying, well, if we want to have a great year, we have to beat a team like the 49ers.
I wonder what the minimum win total Shanahan, Lynch, Garoppolo have to get to. And I ask this because obviously they go 4-12 last year. They go 6-10 a year before, but they win 5 straight. Everybody's feeling good last season. A lot of people thought the Niners would win 10 games, including yours truly. I thought, okay, maybe they'll sneak into the playoffs, be a wild card team. That plan, that went awry really quick in week three against Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. But how many wins will it take to bring back Lynch, Shanahan, and Garoppolo? Because it feels like if they do start 0-1, 0-2, then all of a sudden the rumblings. People are going to start drumming that noise up, and it's going to be hot seat here, hot seat there. Garoppolo's on a hot seat. Lynch is, oh, he's looking over his shoulder. Kyle Shanahan, is he really a good head coach? What's the minimum? How many wins do they need this season to all ensure that they're going to have their jobs next season down in Santa Clara?
For me, it's six. But I say six because I need context. Like, how does the rest of the season go? Is it a disaster at quarterback? Does Jimmy get hurt? Does he go down? Are we robbed of seeing him play a full 16 games? Does Nick Mullins get all these opportunities and he play? Is the defense, you know, does it actually hit the expectations that we all have for that front seven? Because I think that's very important. Solomon Thomas, is he just a lost cause? Is this guy going to come in and actually play well? Is this the last year of Richard Sherman in a 49er uniform? Like, right. There's lots and lots of ways this thing can go. This can still be an unfortunate, tough 6-10 type right. of a season. Because, again, Bucks, Bengals, but then after that, it's Steelers at home. It's Browns at home.
The Rams
go
in L.A.
To L.A. Now the Redskins were winning earlier today.
17
but
nothing against Philly.
Yeah. I chalked that up as a win. That's an East Coast game.
Right.
Okay, that's another East Coast game. And again, there's lots and lots of question marks. But for me, it's context. What does it look like? Because there's lots of different seasons. And 49er fans can remember year two of Alex Smith. They went 7-9 with Norv Turner as the offensive coordinator. And that was optimism.
Oh,
man, Frank Gore ran for 1,600 yards. And look, they've got an unbelievable running game. This is a team on the rise. A young quarterback who played every single snap. We had never seen that from a 49er quarterback at all, even during the Montana and Steve Young era. So what is the context of this particular season? That's what I'm fascinated to see.
Norv Turner left late to San Diego. He got the job, and Jim Hostler became the new offensive coordinator, and that season went down the tube really fast.
Vernon got hurt,
and
then Alex Smith got hurt
year.
It was ugly.
From the 8-3-1, Butch and Bonte, I did my calculations, and no chance the Niners even win by less than 10 points today. Niners win 37-16 in a rout against Tampa Bay.
The math checks out, Guru. I like that one.
You like that? Is that Guru math right there?
I do. But I think one of the key elements for today's game, you have to bring this up. They have a rookie middle linebacker starting for them. They're going to be in the 3-4.
He's a damn good rookie, though.
He's really good.
He's Roquan Smith 2.0.
But what happens for most young rookie
defenders?
They
over-pursue.
Absolutely. And so that's why I want to get the run game going. I want this guy starting to go downhill.
Flowing on a play action.
Pull that bad boy back and throw it right back over the middle. I know George Kittle is somebody that everybody's been targeting in their fantasy leagues, and they're looking at the gaudy offensive statistic numbers. Again, I'm going to go back to, this guy is an unbelievable blocker. He sets the tone in the run game on the edge, and that's where Matt Breida loves to cut it back and come back up. I'm looking for George Kittle to set the edge today with both my bookend tackles, Staley and McGlinchey.
Oh, I cannot wait. From the 5-0-0 to Chill on Nobody text line, Niners going to suck again, 6-10 at best. Signed, a 49er season ticket holder. Let's see if they do go 6-10, because the December schedule's tough. The last six games, like, Niners are 4-12, and they're playing Green Bay, they're playing Baltimore, New Orleans, back-to-back road games. They have Atlanta coming to Levi's. Then they finish the year with the Rams and the Seahawks, but we'll get into that a little bit later, Butcher Boy. I want to talk about the capital, all the capital the Niners spent invested into their defensive line.
Oh.
You trade a second-round pick in next year's draft for D Ford, and you give him a big contract. You draft Nick Bosa number two overall, and there was a lot of debate on whether to draft Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams. Okay, you got Bosa, you got D Ford. You have Buckner in the middle. Solomon Thomas, Armstead, Julian Thomas, DJ Jones. The defensive line is stacked, and they're expected to help out a secondary that looks like the weakness of this defense here. Will it pay off? Will the capital into the D-line, the investments that they made into this massive defensive line, pay dividends for this defense in Robert Saleh's third year as D-coordinator for the Niners?
If I was looking for the area of strength for the 49ers, not just in this game, but just in general, it has to be their D-line. It has to be. This is... Look, when I'm rebuilding my bathroom right now, okay? And if you're going to do it, you do it right. You spend a little more on the tile. You spend a little more on the vanity and the faucets and the things like that. Well, that's what the 49ers did with their defensive line, okay? They went out and they got DeForest Buckner. Yeah. He's a blue chip talent. And I'm looking at the matchup today. If I was going to circle the matchup to where I need this guy to command a double team to open things up for Dee Ford and Nick Bosa, I'm looking at Ryan Jensen, Marpet, and Kappa. That's guard, center, guard for the Tampa Bay Bucks against my man DeForest Buckner. If he can command a double team early in this game, I think it will open things up for the other guys that are on that line. And Dee Ford, you know, all the Bosa stuff, we'll get to him in a second.
Right.
But for me, Dee Ford is more valuable in this game for a couple of reasons. A, he's a veteran.
Yep.
And B, this is somebody that I expect to come in, and I know what he can bring. I know he can set the edge, and I know that he is a great tactician at getting to the quarterback. Who other than to pressure Jameis Winston than Dee Ford? You gave a second-round pick. You paid him a lot of money. I want to see it from the 28-year-old Dee Ford, and I'm optimistic to see him in the red and gold.
Oh, no doubt. And I think Dee Ford's weakness is playing against the run, but Tampa Bay, I don't respect their run game at all. Peyton Barber, he'll get you 3 yards here and there. And then Ronald Jones, both slow backs, big backs. I expect Arians to come out today. And I know he's not calling plays. Byron Leftwich will call plays for the Buccaneers. And we'll get to Todd Bowles and the defense and how they'll blitz Garoppolo a little bit later in his kickoff special with Butcher Boy and Bonte here at 95.7 The Game. But Jameis Winston loves to chuck it. And you know about a Bruce Arians offense. He loves, by the way, it looks like Baker Mayfield. A lot of people getting carted off today. Tyreek Hill, Nick Foles is out with a collarbone issue. Looks like Baker's banged up here in Cleveland. A lot of injuries. Eric Weddle carted off out in Carolina. So we'll update everybody on the scoreboard in a little bit here. Miami down 42-3. I can't believe that. That's a halftime score, folks. It's a first half score here. But back to Tampa Bay. Arians loves those long dropbacks, five-step dropbacks, seven-step dropbacks. He loves to chuck it down the field. And if Jameis Winston gets time today, I'm a little concerned because Mike Evans, who we talked about in the first segment, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, and everybody has been talking about this guy, Chris Godwin, who's supposed to break out this year under Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich in his Tampa Bay offense. The key, it's simple on defense. Go get Jameis. Go get the quarterback. Even if you don't sack him, you have to hit him. You have to fluster him. You got to pressure him and move him out of this pocket here. But then again, Jameis is a guy who can make plays with his legs, and that's where Kwon Alexander and Fred Warner come into play.
Yeah, if you look at Byron Leftwich last year when he was with Arizona, one of the first plays of the game that they ran at Levi's was a simple little play action to a Chris Kirk bomb. Remember that? Josh Rosen stood back there. Adrian Colbert came flying up for no
first
reason.
First play of the scrimmage for Arizona.
It was unbelievable. And I just go back to Bruce Arians and his time at Arizona and what he did against the 49ers. Lots and lots of trip sets, lots and lots of single back. Yes, he's going to run the play action. He's going to maybe throw some screens out there early on to kind of get these D linemen over pursuing.
Right.
But he's going to take shots.
Yep.
And if anyone watched the third week of preseason, Cleveland versus Tampa Bay.
Oh, Cleveland got after him. Olivier Vernon and Miles Garrett beat up Jameis Winston.
Well, and then Jameis Winston, I think he's one of these guys, very much like Ken Dorsey. He sees ghosts in the pocket. He's a guy that if there is pressure on him.
He really just compared Jabu to Ken Dorsey. And I love Ken Dorsey from Miramonte High School. How you going to do that to Jabu?
They both won national championships in college and leave a lot to be desired with decision making in the game. And that's where, again, if I was looking at how I would like to disrupt Jameis Winston, it's getting pressure, making them one-dimensional, and it's making him see ghosts. It's the worst. When that guy drops back and he feels pressure, he looks down at the D-line, and the play is dead. He's not going to run. He's not a threat to go scramble and move the chains. Make this guy see ghosts, and then make him lob passes up. I know Jimmy Garoppolo, we're really worried about his accuracy and his willingness to throw a ball when he probably shouldn't. Jameis Winston is way more accustomed to just lobbing balls up there
all day long.
So I want to see the secondary actually make plays on the ball. How many times have we said as 49er fans, DB, find the ball, turn around, and locate it?
You talk about the secondary here. I want to hear from Richard Sherman real quick. And I got you, Spadonia. I got you back here covered up. Richard Sherman on the 49ers defensive line on what they can do here against Tampa Bay.
Oh, they're really impactful.
They put a lot of stress on them.
Double whammy. Go ahead, Spadone. It's on you.
Oh, they're really impactful. They put a lot of stress on the offensive line, especially the tackles, obviously. Nick is very violent with his hands, and you know, it doesn't seem like they missed a beat. Seems like they have fresh legs, so.
That double whammy was on me, Spinoni. Let's go hear from Richard Sherman on Mike Evans, who's one of the big keys here. Mike Evans. Here's Richard Sherman on Mike Evans.
Well, I think it's going to be a good matchup. You know, we've had many conversations outside of this. He's a cool guy. We have similar interests off the field. Has some beautiful kids, and he's a good man. But, yeah, he's always been a great challenge, and I look forward to it.
Beautiful kids. That's good to know.
I really like Richard Sherman. I never thought that I would say, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I never, ever thought that I would sit here and say, Richard Sherman's probably my favorite 49er. Like, he truly is. I love the
man. That's unbelievable.
I love the man that he is. I love what he represents. I love the journey and his come up.
What do you expect from him this season? A year, because last year he was struggling a bit, coming off of that Achilles tendon tear. When he was playing, he was bailing out at playing corner. Like, he was giving up cushion. He was really just giving up the comeback routes, and speed guys really seemed to bother Richard Sherman. Speed guys bothered him week 3 against Kansas City in the preseason. What do you expect Richard Sherman today against Mike Evans? Will we see that matchup all day long, or will Sherman just play his side, and you think Jameis Winston will avoid throwing towards Richard Sherman?
I don't know. I'm really interested to see what Robert Saleh's got cooked up, because this is a guy last year who he ran one defense, and that was it. You know, the press man on the outside and not a lot of exotic blitzes. I don't know what to expect from Robert Saleh, because when I watch those preseason games, and we know preseason isn't necessarily an indicator of the regular season, but what I saw was guys were blitzing from different platforms. I saw safeties rotating over and bracketing different wide receivers, whether it be Tyreek Hill or anyone else that they had out there. So I think you're going to see a mixture of coverages for Mike Evans, and I think that that's the best way to do it. I wouldn't just throw Richard Sherman on him, because let's say Richard Sherman struggles and it's not working. Well, then where do you go from there?
Hey, Keller Witherspoon? I don't know. What do you expect for Robert Saleh here? Do you expect more blitzes, more coverages here? Will he mix up his coverages and not stay in that Seattle cover one type of defense that he's been running the first 2 years here in San Francisco?
I think it's going to be a combination of seeing how things play out in the first half, but I also think that this is very important. The front needs to get pressure without blitzes. That makes the job so much easier for Robert Saleh, this new wide nine system that they're running.
Yep.
Let's see it. I mean, look, we haven't even talked about him. When you had a terrible year last year and Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, the compensation package, was Nick Bosa.
Right.
And guess what? Unleash this guy. I want to see this guy out there. We talked to JD on Friday night, and JD, John Dickinson, 95.7 The Game reporter, he's in Tampa Bay. He anticipates 20 to 25 snaps for Nick Bosa. You know what? I respect JD's opinion, but I need more. I hope they play him more. I hope there's more opportunities for this guy to pin his ears back and make this team one-dimensional in Tampa Bay, to where Dee Ford, Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner are having a field day in the second half.
Man, we'll head down to Tampa, Butcher. We'll talk to John Dickinson at 12 o'clock and get the vibe at Raymond James Stadium, plus the inactives for today's opening game. Niners-Bucks kickoff at 1:25. The kickoff show continues. Joe Shatsky, the Butcher Boy, Bonte Hill. And it's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking. No compromises.
The kickoff show continues with Bonte Hill and Joe Shatsky on 95.7 The Game.
Kickoff coming up at 1:25. Erds and Tittle, they'll replace us at 1:25 and take you up until the post-game show. We will be back. Overtime will be back after the game. 49ers and Bucks kickoff at 1:25 p.m. down at Raymond James Stadium. John Dickinson, he'll join us at 12 o'clock. He's having fun in Tampa, Florida. I want to see how hot it is down there. Has he sweated through a button-up t-shirt, yet? Butcher Boy, I mean, it's hot down there.
It is. And you know what? It's a beautiful day here in San Francisco. That's one
thing.
It is
nice.
You and I grew up, and I know that I hate putting my sensibilities on the listeners, but I think everybody can relate to this. When we were kids, Sunday was a religious experience for 49er fans.
It was Christmas.
You did nothing. You had the game was front and center. You said, hey, what are you going to do? I'm watching the game. You got to come over. And the city would basically die game day.
It felt like that today when I was driving down to the studio.
Time.
Nobody on the roadways. I got down to the studio from the Richmond District in about 10 minutes, Butch. Got us some coffee from Starbucks. You got the Krispy Kremes. We got Joe Spadoni hanging out. Alex Scott, Kyle Matz, and they're all hanging out. And I'm just thinking, like, man, it's here. Everybody's got their Niner jerseys on, their Niner gear, except for Spadoni, who's I'm not going to say who he roots for.
He roots for the Raiders. It's okay. He
was bad for him. What's
going on, man?
Yeah, I feel bad for him. Who knows what the hell is going on in Alameda right now? But it is like Christmas, because especially when the Niners were good and you knew they were in contention and it felt like every game was a Super Bowl. Every team that came in a Candlestick, or whenever the Niners would travel, they would get their best effort.
Absolutely.
The Niners had this bullseye where week in and week out, they had to play at a Super Bowl level to escape places like Tampa Bay to win. And speaking of Tampa Bay, they haven't opened in Tampa Bay since 1997. And Butcher Boy, I don't know why. I have no idea why you were watching that game before the show.
I had to.
Steve Young got hurt in that game. Warren Sapp wrecked Steve Young, and he wrecked Jerry Rice in that one. Steve Mariucci's first game as head coach. Niners were in their red at the big sombrero, old Tampa Bay Stadium, that weird shape where Super Bowl 25 was held between the Giants and Bills, a game the Niners should have been in, but we won't talk about the NFC Championship against the Giants. But that game, for some reason, you were watching that loss 13-6 to the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Misery loves company, Vontae.
I know it does.
You know, that's one of those moments where everybody remembers where they were. Steve Mariucci's first ever game coach team. They hired a guy who went 6-6 at Cal.
Lost the Aloha Bowl to Navy. Remember that?
You're getting rid of the San Francisco boy, George Seifert, who went to Poly High. I mean, what are we doing? He's from the Mission District. You're going to get rid of this guy, and you bring him. You bring him in, you're hoping that this offense can get going, because they were kind of sputtering.
Right.
You know, they lose Mike Shanahan a couple of years prior, and just getting the flow rocking and rolling, and you come out of nowhere with a Tony Dungy-led defense that was absolutely loaded, and Warrick Dunn and Mike Allstott, and then obviously the guy from California, Fresno State, Trent Dilfer at the quarterback position. But it was also a day for the Tampa Bay Bucks to not only unveil their new defense, but their new uniforms.
You remember that?
I absolutely remember that.
Like, man, there's a new culture down at Tampa.
Absolutely.
They're not the Tampa Bay Yucks anymore.
No.
And, man, that defense was flying around, as you mentioned, John Lynch, Derek Brooks,
Warren Sapp.
And that's before Simeon Rice got there.
I love Simeon Rice.
I mean, they were absolutely loaded. Tony Dungy really changed the culture in Tampa Bay, and they became winners. They became a something. And Tampa Bay had a team where it was like, okay, we could get behind these guys.
Absolutely.
They're going to be a perennial playoff team for the next 10 years. And that they were. But what a nightmare debut for Steve Mariucci, because the next game, they had to go to St. Louis.
Yes.
And they had to start Jim Druckenmiller, a guy who Bill Walsh said, hey, don't draft him. Go get the guy from Arizona State, Jake Plummer.
Yeah, well, you know, Jeff Brohm had came into that game, that first game. He looked terrible.
He was awful.
Totally overwhelmed. I mean, it's just, look, I look at that game and I go, man. If we could have just seen what Garrison Hurst in year one with Steve Young and Jerry Rice, what would that have looked like right out of the gate? And we were kind of robbed of that, and it just sucks. But my bigger takeaway is that was so long ago, B, that now there is a generation of 49er fans that don't know what it's like to wake up in the morning and say, my goodness, the Niners are on. Stop
right.
Everything.
Oh,
I'm not going to go to the CYO soccer game. I'm not going to go play golf. I'm not going to go play pickup hoops. I'm not going to drive out to the beach and enjoy that. No. I'm going to sit down at the couch and I'm going to invite people over, because this is must-watch television. And it feels like we've gone so far away from that.
Yeah, we got to get back to that out here in the Bay Area, especially with the Raiders going to Vegas and the Niners being alone team in the Bay Area down there at Levi Stadium. Let's hear from Jimmy Garoppolo on starting the season on the East Coast. Here's Jimmy Garoppolo on the East Coast road trip.
Going to Tampa won't be terrible. You know, the flight, it is what it is. But that week when we'll be in Youngstown, it's different for us. You know, your routine's a little thrown off. You're staying in a hotel, so things change, but you kind of adapt on the fly, I guess. And I've done a couple of these before, especially from New England, like coming out to the West Coast. So, yeah, you just try to go back to those and see what you did.
We talk about pressure in 2019 for the 49ers, for John Lynch, for Kyle Shanahan. Here's Jimmy G on the pressure on the 2019 Niners.
The pressure is coming from ourselves. You know, we have a pretty high standard in that locker room, and guys hold each other accountable. And I think, you know, this year is more evident than ever since I've been here. We have the leaders. We have guys holding people accountable and you know, taking charge, and it's trickling down. So I think it's, you know, we're going to put more pressure on ourselves than anyone else's.
Yeah, you better put pressure on yourselves, because you guys are all fighting for your own lives and your jobs as NFL players and coaches. And this organization, like, at some point, They got to come out of wandering the desert, right? We got to find the promised land. We got to get somewhere to being relevant on November 1st. I'm sick of it turning the calendar to November 1st, and the 49ers are mathematically eliminated from a playoff spot. Like, I just can't do it. And I know everybody say, oh, playoffs are bust. Let's crawl before we walk. Be relevant on November 1st. I know that sounds like I'm not holding them accountable. I think it's a realistic assessment.
But she had to check me. Steinigu had to check me, and I still feel like this. When is 8-8 become acceptable? That's where we're at right now.
I know.
Saying, hey, we just want to be in a hunt on November 1st. That's how far this franchise has fallen. And that, to me, that's got to change, man. There was a standard here set by Joe Montana, Eddie D, Ronnie Lott, Dwight Clark, rest in peace, Bill Walsh, of course, George Seifert, Ray Rhodes, Mike Holmgren, Rice, all the legends. There was a standard set here. That standard needs to remain the same. And I know it's hard to go Super Bowl or bust. You can't really say that stuff. But damn it, I want playoffs. 8-8, people are saying, hey, you know what? They're 7-9 and 8-8. That's progress, folks. That's progress. Not in my world, man. 8-8 is average. That is mediocre. That is just good enough to say, okay, we're 8-8. We can sell you some BS about contending for a playoff spot the next season. I need a fast start, Butcher Boy, and I need this team to be in a hunt, not November 1st, but December 1st.
Well, of course I want that. We all want that. But again, you got to crawl before you walk. You got to build the foundation.
They've been crawling the last 2 years,
Butch. No, they've been crawling for about two decades under York ownership. And that's the difference between yesteryear and today, is that everything's different. You don't have a Hall of Fame executive.
Yeah.
You don't have a Hall of Fame coach, a revolutionary mm-hmm. coach. You don't have a guy who may, outside of Belichick, me, the greatest talent evaluator of all time when it comes to NFL history. So it starts with drafting, developing, and cultivating all of the right players. Because really, at the end of the day, you can have all the geniuses in the world. You need Jimmys and Joes. You need X's and O's, right? They go hand in hand with each other. So you got to have blue chip talent. I look at DeForest Buckner. Man, that's a blue chip talent. I look at someone like Mike McGlinchey. Man, that's a blue chip talent. I look at George Kittle.
Right.
Blue chip talent. And then it's hard because I want to say that maybe Fred Warner could become that one day. Maybe Jimmy Garoppolo can become that one day. Maybe Deebo Samuel can become that. Who knows about Matt Breida? Maybe he can become that. But you got to prove it. Talk and the cliches and all these things, it's all hot air to fill time. I need this team to go out and beat a team that we all expect them and want them to beat in Tampa Bay. And today it starts.
JD will join us in a couple minutes live in Tampa Bay as we get the inactive list. I haven't been able to check it out yet. We'll get that from JD in just a few moments here on 95.7 The Game, courtesy of the Dial Pack guest line from the 650 on the Chill Not Nobody text line. Will there be a Periscope show post-game? No, we'll be on the airways here as soon as the game is over. Butcher Boy and I will be here up until 7 p.m. So we'll Periscope at halftime of the football game on Twitter, and then we'll be on these airwaves on 95.7 The Game. Maybe we'll just have some cameras set up, and we could live stream it that way.
And I want to hear from the fans, 888-957-9570, not just before the game, but as well as after the game. Like, this is a huge game. If they win this game, they're moving forward. This is a huge type of a momentum builder for them. Not only do you win an East Coast game and knock off the rust of the five-year drought not winning on the Eastern time zone, but you're going to have the team camaraderie of an entire week in Youngstown, Ohio, where everybody's feeling good.
Right.
We all know what it's like. When the Niners lose, I couldn't watch ESPN and Chris Burns. And Tom
it ruined
Jackson.
My week.
It would destroy everything.
Now it's like, oh, they lost. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
What's next?
How's my fantasy team looking?
Yeah, exactly. Thank the Lord for fantasy football, especially these last two decades. From the 510 to Chill Not Nobody text line, if Jimmy Garoppolo can be a game manager and the defense can be top 12, we should be 9-7 this year. Don't know if that's a playoff record, but definitely heading in the right direction. Can his defense be a top 12 defense in the NFL?
I actually think, well, the nuance here is, yes, they can be. Will the offense be complementary enough and sustain drives to allow them to be? If you look at all the great defenses, usually there's a controlled run game that goes involved with it. Like Baltimore last year, I look at the template for how they won games. They shortened them. They ran the hell out of the ball, and they played into their defense's field position stance, and they did a really good job of that. Can Kyle and the offense sustain drives enough to keep the defense off the field? You were talking about the humidity in this game. I mean, the last thing I want is this defense on the field for 12, 15 plays drives.
Yeah,
that would be big time. I think I definitely have the talent. If you were asking me today, what's going to be the most surprising part of this year? I have a feeling it's that Robert Saleh is going to develop and step in year two as just year three. I think he's going to take a massive step forward. I think the personnel is significantly better, and I think that this defense finally has some war hogs on the line that can set the tone and minimize the lack of depth that they have in the secondary. I think that this defense is going to be really good this year.
We'll get to JD in just a second here. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM. In HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.